Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. The Department of Homeland Security could shut down if the Senate doesn't pass a funding bill by Friday, and we'll have the latest on the impasse in Washington on our Capitol report. Congress isn't the only place where there's a deep freeze this week. A cold spell is gripping much of the nation, and we'll have details on some places where the snow level is up to the rooftops. Spring Valley residents, be sure to stay tuned for an alert on an attempted kidnapping Tuesday of a middle school student on her way to school. We'll also have news about a local high school custodian who's been arrested for sexual advances toward a student. Plus, hear how a carjacker who stole a pizza delivery vehicle got foiled by an unexpected roadblock in East County. And speaking of unusual voyages, a Chula Vista woman has been named a finalist in a contest to be among the first to set up a new community on the planet Mars. Our Green Scene report today will have details about a new bill in Congress that critics say could lead to the extermination of eagles and give the wind industry immunity for killing eagles and other endangered species. What if you had a fire and your fire extinguisher didn't work? There's a recall on some fire extinguishers, and we'll have details on today's show. Our newsmaker interviews today are with organizers of a brand new super PAC that's been formed right here in San Diego, targeting public officials who ignore public safety. Storage of nuclear waste from San Onofre is at the top of Monster PAC's list, and their first targets include a local San Diego congressman. Speaking of targets, the Islamic State, or ISIL, has announced its intent to target Rome, the heart of Christianity. Here are the disturbing details and some historical context in the second half of today's show. Also learn about a boot drive that local firefighters will be holding to benefit burn victims. Then on Destination East County, we'll share some fun and festive events coming up this week, from rock climbing in a park to concerts that rock, a music fest, and Vallecito Day commemorations of cattle drives, mountain men, and life on the frontier. Also hear why Bill Horn, chairman of the County Board of Supervisors, has declared 2015 the Year of the Veteran, and the role that an East County Magazine investigation played in launching one of those new programs to help local vets. We'll also tell you about an open house in Jamul for the Helen Knowles Foundation to help prevent breast cancer in young women. Plus, on Tribal Beat, learn about an important archaeological find documenting the history of the Kumeyaay Indians in our region. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. The Department of Homeland Security is set to shut down if Congress doesn't pass a funding bill by Friday. The White House says it is preparing for a potential shutdown starting this weekend, The Washington Post reports. Republicans who control the Senate have repeatedly refused to allow a vote on a funding bill for Homeland Security unless it also contains language to repeal the immigration reforms that President Obama issued by executive order. Republicans claim these reforms are unconstitutional, but Obama says he will veto any bill that has that language in it. Senate Democrats have filibustered to block repeal of the immigration measures, with some Democratic leaders accusing Republicans of playing Russian roulette with national security. But on Monday, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell indicated he will allow votes later this week on a separate bill to repeal a portion of the immigration measures, separating that out from the critical Homeland Security funding. Homeland Security includes agencies ranging from Customs and Border Patrol to the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, that handles natural disasters, as well as the Secret Service and Transportation Security Administration, or TSA, yes, those airport screeners. Some critical workers would be asked to stay on the job without pay if a shutdown occurs. The shutdown threat comes as Islamic State or ISIL terrorists have issued a veiled threat against the Mall of America in Minnesota and tweeted images of an Islamic State flag flying over the White House. Democratic Congressman Steve Israel of New York, the target of those 9/11 terrorist attacks, says a shutdown would be one of the dumbest things they can do, and it's also one of the most dangerous things they can do, he says. Some Republicans agree. Senator John McCain of Arizona, a former Republican presidential candidate, stated adamantly on Monday night that we cannot shut down the Department of Homeland Security. The president's immigration reforms, which would protect an estimated 4 million undocumented family members of legal residents from deportation, are currently in legal limbo. A Texas judge has blocked President Obama's orders until a lawsuit filed by over two dozen states works its way through the courts. But the Obama administration has asked that judge to lift his stay, and the Obama administration has also announced it will appeal the ruling to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals.
While San Diegans are enjoying the sunshine this week, the northeastern U.S. has been gripped by record cold temperatures and snow, a lot of snow. Just how deep is it? Lowell, Massachusetts received 111 inches. That's over 9 feet of snow. About 8 feet fell in Boston, and 7 to 8 feet of snow have blanketed parts of New York and Pennsylvania. Some residents found snow above the tops of their doorways, forcing them to dig tunnels to get out. Cars, trucks, and even an ambulance have been buried under mounds of snow. Internet videos show startled pets leaping into snowdrifts and vanishing, then resurfacing. Boston cyclists built a snow tunnel when their usual commuting path was blocked by the heavy snowfall. Some residents have been spotted skiing through downtown Boston and even sledding off roofs, an activity that drew warnings from the public officials for safety's sake. The Siberian Express has brought record-breaking cold across the Midwest, too, with wind chill factors reaching 40 below zero in parts of northern Minnesota and North Dakota. Temperatures dipped to 30 below across some northern regions. That's colder than Anchorage, Alaska. Sub-zero temperatures are being recorded as far south as Ohio. Another winter storm is set to hit, bringing even more snow. Here in San Diego County, warm, sunny skies are forecast for the rest of this week, though a storm this weekend could bring some rain and even snow to our mountains in East County. But don't expect much sympathy if you're talking to friends and relatives in the eastern U.S., and be glad you don't have to dig a snow cave next time you want to take a stroll outside your front door. Reporting for East County Magazine and basking in the sun here in San Diego's East County, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with a crime alert. The Sheriff's Department is warning Spring Valley residents about two masked men who tried to lure a 13-year-old girl into a van. According to Sergeant Pat McAvoy, a newer model black Ford van with dark side windows pulled up beside the La Prensa Middle School student who was walking to school near the intersection of Orville Street and McClay Street Tuesday morning at 8:50 a.m. A side door was open and the girl saw two men in the back wearing masks. The men tried to entice her into the van, but instead she ran to the school to safety. The suspects were white and in their 20s, but have not been located. The van was last seen heading east toward Orville. Anyone with information can call the Sheriff's Department non-emergency line at 858-565-5200 or call Crime Stoppers anonymously to be eligible for a reward at 888-580-8477.
This is Ed Barrena with a Crime Beat Report. A 21-year-old substitute custodian with the Grossmont Union High School District has been arrested after texting a 14-year-old female student to arrange an off-campus sexual liaison. Elias Morales II allegedly exchanged inappropriate text messages with the student at El Capitan High School in Lakeside, asking her to meet him. Sheriff's deputies later posed as the student and agreed to meet him in Lakeside, where he was taken into custody, according to Lieutenant Duckworth with the San Diego Sheriff's Department. Deputies from the Sheriff's Sexual Assault Unit and Santee Sheriff's Station are continuing the investigation to determine if there are any additional victims. The Sheriff's Department encourages parents to be aware of whom their children communicate with while using social media and cell phones. Sheriff's deputies booked Morales into the county jail. He was released after posting a bond and will be arraigned on February 27th in the El Cajon Courthouse.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Happy's pizza delivery person was not so happy Monday night when he was held up at gunpoint by two suspects wearing masks. The thieves called in a pizza order, and when the delivery driver arrived at a house in the 1100 block of West Chase Avenue in El Cajon, they brandished a gun and stole his SUV, cell phone, all his cash, and even his shoes. The suspects handed off the stolen SUV to a woman near the 1200 block of El Cajon Boulevard. She drove into La Mesa, where she encountered a street closure on Amaya Drive due to a hazmat incident from a big rig fuel spill. La Mesa police spotted the stolen vehicle and stopped the driver. Fox 5 reports there was confusion at first since the person driving the vehicle did not match the description of the carjackers who stole the pizza delivery vehicle. But upon further inspection, police confirmed the license plate was a match, which was further confirmed by fresh pizza in the back seat. The victim recovered all of his belongings, including the pizza, but not his shoes. The woman, Jessica Ann Garcia, 31, of El Cajon, was charged with robbery and carjacking. A second suspect remains at large. He is described as black in his 20s or early 30s. The woman, identified as 31-year-old Jessica Ann Garcia of El Cajon, was charged with robbery and carjacking. The other suspect remains at large. He's described as black in his 20s or early 30s, 5 foot 11 feet tall and weighing 180 pounds. He was wearing a black jacket, pants, and gloves. This has been Leon Thompson with the Crime Beat Report for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
This is Ed Barrena on KNSJ with the story that's out of this world. Mars One, a Dutch nonprofit, has announced plans to build the first permanent settlement on Mars. More than 200,000 people have applied to join the first expedition of settlers on a 143-million-mile one-way trip to the fourth planet from the sun. Carmen Paul, a 32-year-old woman who was an Air Force and National Guard member from Chula Vista, is among 100 finalists from around the world, from whom just 24 people will be chosen. The trip won't be blasting off until 2024, but there's one big downside: no return ticket due to the long distance and travel time. Bas Lansdorp, co-founder and CEO of Mars One, says the process is all about finding out who has the right stuff to go to Mars. He said these aspiring Martians provide the world with a glimpse into who the modern-day explorers will be. So why would anyone want to give up life on Earth for a future on a Martian settlement? Carmen Paul says joining a manned mission to Mars would be the absolute pinnacle of human achievement, the UT reports. She describes herself as a courageous person who likes taking risks. She has military training in computer technologies and a witty sense of humor. Mars One predicts the first crew of four will reach Mars in 2025 after a seven-month journey. The remaining crews will arrive in flights every 2 years thereafter. The cost for the first four will be an estimated $6 billion funded by corporate sponsors. Several months before the first human departure, the Mars One Selection Committee will determine which groups in training are ready to depart to Mars. It is expected that at least six groups will be ready for the trip. The Mars One website reveals, because this mission is humankind's mission, Mars One has the intention to make this a democratic decision. The whole world will have a vote of which group of four will be the first humans on Mars.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community. This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. Wildlife experts are voicing alarm over a new bill, House Resolution 493, the so-called Clean Energy Producers Act, introduced into Congress. If passed, the measure would give the wind industry amnesty for bird deaths at wind farms built since the 1980s. It would also allow wind energy companies to obtain take permits, allowing them to legally kill bald and golden eagles for up to 30 years, as long as the deaths are not intentional. In addition, the bill weakens protections under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act for other bird species. Backers of the bill seek to expand wind energy production in an era of growing concerns over climate change and the need to reduce greenhouse gases. But critics contend that there's nothing green about destroying our national symbol, the eagle, or other wildlife at risk from whirling wind turbines. Wildlife biologist and eagle expert Jim Wiegand warns, this bill destroys avian protection laws, clearing a path for all industries claiming to be engaged in lawful activity. The measure could protect the oil industry from liability for birds killed by oil spills, and also protect companies that kill birds in the solar, agricultural, logging, and other industries, Wiegand says. He contends that the wind industry has been hiding the true numbers of eagles and other protected species killed. How? By rigging body counts, making search areas around turbines too small, or not searching often enough, allowing coyotes and other predators to carry off the evidence. Since 1997, over 31,000 eagles have been sent to the Eagle Repository in Denver, and orders filled by the repository for eagle bodies and parts for Native American ceremonial purposes have increased 366% from 1997 to 2013. Where are all those extra eagle carcasses coming from? The source has not been disclosed, but the increase corresponds with the proliferation of wind turbines built across America. Moreover, Wiegand contends, the regions that now ship the most eagle carcasses to the repository are the regions that have installed the most wind energy in eagle habitat since 2006. Other species are also impacted. Only a few years ago, the endangered whooping crane population was expanding at a steady rate. That all changed after 2007, when thousands of wind turbines invaded their extensive central flyway habitat. But recently, as citizens have begun demanding accountability of the wind industry for the increasing number of bird deaths, the industry faces the prospect of windfall profits disappearing. So H.R. 493 has been introduced to protect the wind industry from liability for bird deaths. The bill does not even require reporting of eagle deaths, which remains astoundingly voluntary. Wiegand likens that to letting hit-and-run drivers voluntarily report their victims. He predicts that species extermination and extinction will now officially come second to industry profits.
This is Ed Barreno with news about a recall of 4.6 million fire extinguishers sold at Home Depot, Walmart, and other major stores. The disposable extinguishers are made by the Kidd Company, spelled K-I-D-D-E, which has received 11 reports of the recalled fire extinguishers failing to discharge. When a fire breaks out is not the time to find out your fire extinguisher is not working, but that's exactly what could happen due to faulty plastic valves on these extinguishers. The faulty products were sold at major home hardware and department stores nationwide, as well as online from August 2013 through November 2014, according to the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. Consumers are advised to immediately contact Kidd for a replacement fire extinguisher by calling the company's toll-free number at 855-283-7991 or visit Kidd.com and click on Safety Notice for more information.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today, my very special guests are David Griffin Eisenstein and Alexandra Estev, and they are here from the new super PAC called Monsta PAC, that's spelled M-O-N-S-T-A-H, PAC, P-A-C, and it is a political action committee that started right here in San Diego County. And you're going to be hearing all about that, as well as their brand new Monsta PAC Network 2016. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. We're really glad to be here.
And Alexandra, we're pleased to have you as well.
Thank you very much.
Now, David, tell us what the mission of Monsta PAC is all about.
The mission of Monsta PAC is to promote the health and safety of Americans, in particular Southern Californians, through support of and opposition to candidates in Congress, support of those candidates which agree with our important positions on health and safety, and of course working for the defeat of candidates who do not.
Very good. Well, public safety is certainly a critical issue here in San Diego. So the PAC itself is nonpartisan, I understand. Tell us what some of the biggest issues are that you're concerned about.
Well, we're concerned about, first of all, you know, Citizens United is a decision of the United States Supreme Court which legalized the super PAC status, where an individual, a union, or a corporation can give as much as they darn well please to a super PAC to use for the issues that it supports. So there's no limitation on monies that can come into a super PAC.
Right. And many of those super PACs have been used for things that would be sort of anti-democratic or pro-corporate agendas, for example, sometimes pro-union agendas, but not necessarily advocating in the public interest. In fact, very often just the opposite. Yours sounds like it's unique to me or unusual in that it's a PAC that seems to be advocating for the public interest, at least on health and safety issues.
We believe that very strongly. We are a reaction to the Citizens United decision, not in support of it. We want to be on the same playing field with the PACs of the billionaire class. We want to be able to compete with right. those PACs with respect to candidates that we support or oppose. And we're not going to ever be catching up to the Koch brothers. That's not on our political agenda or reasonable. That's not something that we expect to accomplish. What we are doing is something more progressive and democratic with our Monster PAC Network 2016, which is to take reasonably sized donations, contributions of $500 from people who are interested in the ideals that we support.
What are the ideals that you support? Can you give us some examples of the specific issues that you're going to be looking at candidates' positions on in this campaign, such as, for example, I understand San Onofre is one of your concerns.
Yeah. San Onofre is a big concern of ours. It's an existential threat to everybody's survival in the 50-mile radius around San Onofre, which is, as you know, Miriam, is 2 miles from the outskirts of San Clemente. It's within 20 miles of my office in Oceanside.
Yeah, so big concern within 50 miles of much of East County, I might add, that would be within that sort of, you know, meltdown zone if something were to happen. Now, even though the nuclear facility has been shut down, what are the threats that still remain that you believe need to be dealt with?
All the nuclear waste that was created before it was shut down is still stored there on the grounds of the San Onofre nuclear generating station, and it's right on the bluffs overlooking the ocean, and it's, the bluffs are made of sand. And what the plan is now to bury the waste that was created during the operations of
And what's wrong with that? What's the worst-case scenario for those that aren't that familiar with the issue out there?
Well, it seems like they've adopted the worst-case scenario for the unsafe storage of the nuclear waste by when I say they, it's the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has adopted a plan, at least tentatively, that Edison, the private company that is managing that facility now, and will be during the whole decommissioning process, which could take 20 years in total. The NRC has indicated its favor towards a plan, and this is almost unbelievable to me, a plan of allowing Edison to put all of the nuclear waste in steel tanks that are 5/8 of an inch thick.
Oh, my goodness.
Only 5/8 of an inch thick. And that's all that separates the horrific nuclear waste at the San Onofre site from doing the kind of terrible and death-causing damage to 20 million people within a 50-mile radius. That's all that separates us from that waste. So we think that there should be a 20-inch tank that as is used in Europe that would be much safer. But what we really want is for that waste to get moved out of Southern California, period.
Yeah, there you go. Another issue is climate change?
Climate change, definitely. There's Daryl Issa, by the way, our representative in District 49, which is where San Onofre is and where my office is and mm-hmm. where I live. He's a climate change denier. In fact, he won an award from the League of Conservation Voters recently, last year, for being the climate change denier of the year. That's,
wow.
That's really saying something.
Quite an accomplishment there.
Absolutely. Quite. That's why they call it an award.
I guess so. Not the kind of award one necessarily wants to receive. Where does he stand on the San Onofre nuclear waste issue?
He stands with his back to it and turns his back to it as often as he can. In fact, he doesn't acknowledge it as an issue. He does not participate in the meetings.
Wow. Quite the contrast to, say, Senator Barbara Boxer, California's senator, who's been very outspoken against much of the things that have been going on with that.
Yes.
Alexandra, I would like to ask you how successful the outreach has been on this. Can you give us an idea of how many members you have now of the Monster PAC Network 2016?
This is actually pretty new, this Monster PAC Network 2016. We are working on this for a couple of weeks now, but so we already raised funds over like $25,000 already.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a few members, but actually, so we launched it very recently. And so basically how it works. We're trying to get people, to get them contributors, to propose them to be contributors to this network, to get involved basically in our causes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we propose them to become a member by contribute up to $500. And by also bringing two other peoples who will do the same. We are celebrating this launch on February 28th, this month. So it will be in Santa Monica, very great venue, Magicopolis, where we're going to have a magic show. So it's going to be a great time together. It's from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. and we will enjoy great speakers, but also this magic show together.
Okay. And where can people get more information about the Monster Pack if they want to learn more?
Well, we have a website. It's www.monsterpack.com.
M-O-N-S-T-A-H-P-A-C, monsterpack.com.
David, back to you. This is, we might add, a nonpartisan pack, which in theory, I understand, could target people in any party if they were not favoring public safety. But the first candidate that you have set your sights on is San Diego's own Congressman, Daryl Issa. Tell us why.
Well, Daryl Issa has not done the job he's supposed to do as the representative of District 49. That's first and foremost reason. He's not paid attention to the existential threat that is posed by San Onofre and the unsafe storage of nuclear waste on its premises. He's stood by idly while others in the community have tried to work something positive out to get that incredibly damaging, potentially, nuclear waste out of our area, out of Southern California, out of the way of our people. We've got 300,000 automobiles driving up and down I-5 past San Onofre every day.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got 20 million people residing within a 50-mile area of that nuclear generating station. So why isn't Daryl Issa, who is supposed to be our representative, concentrating on that instead of continuing to build his fortune and doubling his net worth every year or two?
Yeah, he is the richest or one of the richest members of Congress, depending what year you look at that survey.
He's the CEO of about 12 different LLCs and corporations, mostly dealing with real estate, and he's also the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, or he was until recently. And so we believe that this is one of the problems with Daryl Issa, is that he's more interested in accumulating his wealth in Congress than serving the people of his district.
Yeah, he was written up by CREW, which is a nonpartisan organization dedicated to ethics in government, as being one of the most corrupt members of Congress, which was interesting. We had some coverage of him involving a wind project locally that was very questionable. And in the research, we found that he had taken massive contributions from energy corporations. I don't know if that has anything to do with his reluctance to take stands on San Onofre, but, you know, certainly Sempra Energy, the energy industry in general, was among his major donors. And we'd broken a story on him here where there was a lot of evidence to suggest that the Ocotillo Wind Project was fraudulent, that they had falsified the actual location of the project on maps to make it look like it was 3,000 feet higher in elevation. An international wind expert was warning this looked like a fraudulent project. Tribal leaders and environmental leaders had met with Congressman Issa, asking him to take a stand on this, along with then-Congressman Bob Filner. Filner was concerned enough to write to the Secretary of the Treasury and say, this is approved, it could be a worse project than Solyndra. And nothing was done. It was approved. Issa kept telling people that if you bring me more evidence, more evidence, more evidence, he would stand up and speak out against this. But he never did, even with predictions by an international wind expert that this appeared to be a fraudulent project. And in fact, after the one-year data came in on that, it was producing far less energy than was produced. And at least one expert said the U.S. government probably had grounds to go after this corporation under the False Claims Act. So that was another example, I think, where he did not appear to be listening to his constituents or at least to major interests in his area. His district, I might add, has been redistricted and now is limited only to coastal areas. But certainly you would think that when you have, you know, the chairman of major tribes talking to you, the leaders of major environmental organizations in the San Diego County region.
Well, these are the conflicts of interest I was talking about. With the 12 companies that he's got a far-flung real estate empire, and he's worth over $500 million. And when the person who is the chairman of the House Oversight Committee runs off and does witch hunts on things like Benghazi and
which was debunked, I might add, by a Republican-funded study from another Republican committee.
After much wasting of governmental funds, many millions were spent on that witch hunt. And, you know, other witch hunt cities had. Wouldn't it have been nice if he had done an oversight hearing with respect to the project you just mentioned? That would have been very powerful. He has a big megaphone, or he did as the chairman of that committee.
It was asked for. That's why they went to him, actually. It was because of his power as chair of the powerful House Oversight Committee, but he was not interested in that. Besides ISA, and there's some interesting videos on your site that folks can look at if they want to see a little bit more about your views on Mr. ISA there, one of which suggests, is he a sociopath, which is quite interesting. But besides Congressman ISA, who else might be potential targets in the future for this PAC, especially in Southern California, or is there anyone else here in San Diego County?
I think there may be somebody else here in San Diego County. We have in the past focused on Mr. ISA, but we're not done with considering candidates that deserve our support and considering those that deserve our opposition. Mm-hmm. And I believe that candidates that are turning a blind eye to Senator Ofori, like Mr. ISA has, should be questioned and should be called to account for that, and also conflicts of interest and, you know, what is their true intention on going to Congress? These are things we're going to be asking of candidates. We're aware of another congressman in San Diego County, Duncan Hunter, who has all of the earmarks of being with this crowd in the House of Representatives that's obstructionist, that has refused to acknowledge climate change, who has had some interesting ideas for conducting warfare.
Tactical nukes on the battlefield being one of them.
I find that interesting. And, you know, that's certainly he's an example of the type of congressman that may very well be opposed by our super PAC. We want to basically make our selections based upon where we can do the most good. And so we'll have we'll definitely weigh him and several others in the balance. And it's not necessarily just going to be Southern California. We have a nationwide problem of having nuclear waste created, and then there's no place to put it. You can't safely store it any place in this whole country. And that's a terrible, terrible catastrophe.
Yeah, he rather infamously in a congressional debate, Congressman Hunter, that is, indicated that we should be storing all these wastes at a particular nuclear waste disposal site in Nevada, Yucca Mountain, apparently forgetting or not realizing that he had just voted to shut that down prior to that debate. So
that's a terrible lapse in memory, isn't it? I mean, it might not be a lapse of memory at all.
I don't know.
I will see. I mean, I think that deserves some scrutiny. That's the kind of playing fast and loose with the facts that we hate about our people in Washington. That's just not good.
And there again, you are a nonpartisan PAC. We've been talking specifically about two local Republican congressmen as, you know, one specifically at the target of the super PAC, another potentially down the road. But with California's top two primary system, we now have the clear potential that we can wind up with, you know, two Democrats running against each other in a general election, or two Republicans running against each other in a general election, or perhaps a Democrat and a Republican where it's the reverse. You have a Democrat that's turning a blind eye on these issues and maybe a Republican who cares about them. So can you clarify for us a little bit how that works?
Sure. We do not favor a political party. We find ourselves siding mostly with progressives, and most, I would say, of the candidates who are Democrats seem to have a little bit more going for them, in our view, than the bulk of Republican candidates. That's on average. That's certainly on an individual basis.
So being more progressive of the two on public health and safety issues, regardless of the party.
We would, and we want that person that we favor to be open to helping with the situation of moving the nuclear waste out of Southern California and other things that, of course, we've gone over to a certain extent. But it's certainly that issue that really is a telling one for us. To answer your question more directly, there could be a situation where we would favor a Republican. Like, for instance, if Darrell Issa was challenged by a Republican in our district and the Republican had good things going for that candidate, we would gladly try to help with that because we do oppose Darrell Issa still, and we're going to, assuming he's running for re-election in 2016, we will again.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became interested in this issue, your political evolution, so to speak, David.
Well, you know, as I was growing up in Phoenix, Arizona, in high school, I wrote a paper on the National Health Service in England. And I was just fascinated by the fact that there was such a thing as socialized medicine in England. And I wondered why we didn't have something, not necessarily socialized medicine, but more of a national health insurance available in the United States. So I guess I tended to be progressive as a young man. And when I went to college in the late 60s and early 70s, I certainly was progressive. My first political party that I joined was the New Party.
Really?
And then I became a Democrat in Pima County, Arizona, which is Tucson, University of Arizona. Mm-hmm. I lived in Tucson for 20 years. After about 13 years of practicing law, I believed that Arizona needed to go in a new direction, and I was then qualified to run as a candidate for the Attorney General position there statewide, and I did do so. I also changed my party affiliation to Republican before I did that. I was very fed up with the Democrats in Pima County. They weren't exactly paying attention to business as much as I thought that they should. So I and as a reaction to that, became a Republican, and I ran in Republican primary, lost in the Republican primary for the Arizona Attorney General position, and then later on, as I continued to practice law, I mellowed in terms of my politics and became more of an independent thinker in terms of my politics. And by the time I got to California in 2001, I was ready to register. And a few years after coming to California, did register as an independent. And I continue to be an independent.
Interesting. That sounds like a similar political evolution to what many Americans have undergone. We certainly know that independent or declined to state is the fastest growing party in California here, at least. The event that you have coming up on February 28th, we might add that 50% of that is benefiting your PAC, and the other 50% is benefiting something called the Sudden Cardiac Arrest Foundation.
Correct.
Can you give us just a one-minute blurb on that? We're going to have a whole separate interview on that coming up in the future, listeners, but tell us just very briefly what that's for.
Well, I believe very strongly that we need to proliferate automated external defibrillators, which are called commonly in the vernacular, AEDs. And that's what Sudden Cardiac Arrest Foundation's mission is to support the proliferation of AEDs.
Very good. And people can find out about that at the Sudden Cardiac Arrest Foundation website, which is scaf.org.
Correct.
And again, listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been talking with David Griffith Eisenstein and Alexandra Estev from the MONSTA PAC, M-O-N-S-T-A-H PAC, which is a new super PAC dedicated to public health and safety issues, and it was started right here in San Diego. Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners today?
Well, I'd like to see a new congressman in District 49. I don't think that's a surprise to you, Miriam, but there's some changes that need to be made in Congress. We know that. All of us do.
Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
threats of the Islamic State or ISIL forces spreading across northern Africa and into Europe are growing. After establishing a caliphate in parts of Iraq and Syria, ISIL jihadists have reportedly burned 40 people alive in Iraq's Anbar province and beheaded 20 Egyptian Christians in Libya in northern Africa. Last week, Turkish intelligence warned that ISIL may be plotting terror attacks in Turkey. And now, leaders of the Islamic State have declared their intention to conquer Rome in Italy, the symbolic heart of Christianity. A new video issued by ISIL last week addressed the nation signed with the blood of the cross, quote, warning that we are south of Rome. Security has reportedly been strengthened at the Vatican, home of the Pope and seat of the Roman Catholic Church. Last October, the cover story of ISIL's Dabiq magazine was titled Reflections on the Final Crusade. It showed a photo of a black Islamic State flag flying over St. Peter's Square at the Vatican and predicted the conquest of Rome. The article warned ominously, "We will conquer your Rome, break your crosses, and enslave your women by the permission of Allah the Exalted. If we do not reach that time, then our children and grandchildren will reach it, and they will sell your sons as slaves in the slave market." The article further incited violence, stating every Muslim should get out of his house, find a crusader, and kill him. The actions and rhetoric of ISIL bear disturbing similarities to another parallel in history, Adolf Hitler's quest to conquer Europe and kill all who did not fit his vision of Aryan perfection, including Jews, gypsies, gays, and others. In Hitler's case, the prejudice was based principally on race, while ISIL is driven by a bloodthirsty religious zeal. Both are equally dangerous, since both movements hold a core belief that global conquest and genocide are justifiable. President Barack Obama has asked Congress to approve a war declaration against ISIL. But at a recent conference on extremism with predominantly Muslim attendees, the president insisted that America is not at war with Islam, but rather with extremism. The president insisted they are not religious leaders, they're terrorists. He added, "We are at war with people who have perverted Islam." He defended his stance by stating that calling the crisis a religious war would only give an appearance of legitimacy to ISIL's claims of a holy war. He also called on Muslim clerics to denounce the violence. Obama has drawn criticism, however, from some for refusing to single out Islamic extremism as the enemy. Politico reports that former New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani, at a fundraiser for Republican presidential candidates, stated, "You've got to be able to criticize Islam for the parts of Islam that are wrong. You criticize Christianity for the part of Christianity that is wrong." Provocatively, Giuliani added, "I'm not sure how wrong the Crusades are. The Crusades were kind of an equal battle between two groups of barbarians, the Muslims and the crusading barbarians." As for the president, Giuliani complained, "What's wrong with this man that he can't stand up and say there's a part of Islam that's sick?" The Crusades in modern times have been portrayed as examples of ruthless barbarism by Christian forces. There were clearly atrocities committed on both sides, and some crusaders even targeted groups other than Muslims for persecution. But the truth is more complex, and at its roots, the Crusades arose in defense of Christianity after hostilities instigated by Muslim forces. While many modern-day Muslims have denounced violence and jihad, such practices were once widely entrenched across much of the world. Crisis Magazine published an article titled, "A Crash Course on the Crusades." This excerpt from The Crusades, The World's Debate by Hilaire Belloc, describes the origins of the Crusades. Belloc wrote, "From its beginnings, Islam has been a violent and imperialistic movement. Within 100 years of the death of Muhammad, Islamic armies had conquered ancient Christian lands in the Middle East, North Africa, and in Europe, Spain. The holy city of Jerusalem was captured in 638. Islamic armies launched raids throughout the Mediterranean and even attacked Rome in 846 AD. Life in the conquered regions for Christians was not easy," Belloc wrote. "Many were forced to convert. Others converted due to societal pressure. Christians and Jews were considered to be barely above the status of slaves in Islamic society. Still others maintained the faith at great risk." If that sounds eerily parallel to the conquests by the Islamic State today and its subsequent massacres, forced conversions, and enslavement on conquered peoples, read on. In the early 11th century, Jerusalem's Egyptian Muslim ruler ordered the destruction of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Then, when Turkish Muslims conquered Jerusalem in the 11th century, they began a campaign of persecution against Christian pilgrims in the Holy Land, in which the bishop and 12,000 pilgrims were massacred by Muslims only 2 miles from Jerusalem. The Muslims then waged war against the Christian Byzantine Empire, winning a decisive victory at the Battle of Manzikert in 1071. Belloc concludes, "It was this event that one historian has described as the shock that launched the Crusades. Christians fought back. propelling the invaders to reclaim conquered lands, setting the stage for smoldering religious resentments that continue to burn in the present day as Europe once again faces the threat of violence from brutal and extremist Islamic forces. It's important to understand this history, since as the philosopher and writer George Santayana observed back in 1905, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The countywide firefighter boot drive is the biggest and most important fundraiser of the year for the Byrne Institute. Firefighters from over 40 departments will grab their boots and congregate at nearly 100 intersections on March 4th. Virtually every fire department in the county is participating, so look for them in your neighborhood. Each year, they generously give of their time to raise funds to support these programs and services, including sending burn-injured children to a special camp for burn survivors called Camp Beyond the Scars. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes rock climbing, live jazz, and R&B concerts here in East County.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including St. Patrick's Day festivities, the Ramona Music Fest, a Shakespearean play with a contemporary twist, and Vallecitos Day, celebrating our frontier heritage.
Stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine. Here's an event that really rocks. Balance Fitness invites you to enjoy a free day of rock climbing at Mission Trails Regional Park this Saturday, February 28th, from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Rock climber Brandon Michael, who has over 15 years of experience climbing rocks, will lead participants on some of his favorite climbs. This event is open to everyone, whether you're a beginner or a pro. Meet up at the Mission Trails Visitor Center to participate. For more information, visit mtrp.org.
Spring is in the air, and the Hakumba hikers and walkers are hitting the trail. On Saturday, February 28th, the group will meet at the Hakumba Spa on Old Highway 80, then head out along the Border Patrol Trail to Airport Mesa and the Rock House for a five-mile hike. The hike starts after 8 a.m., but hikers can order breakfast at 7 a.m. Dogs on leashes are welcome on this hike. After the hike, bring your swimsuit and a towel if you'd like to enjoy the mineral hot springs at the Hakumba Spa, courtesy of the owners.
Now for some jazzy news. Danny Green and his keyboard jazz trio will perform a free concert at Mission Trails Regional Park on Sunday, March 1st at 3 p.m. For details, visit mtrp.org.
Singer-songwriter Billy Ocean will perform on March 5th at the Sequan Live and Up Close Theater in El Cajon. Britain's top black recording star of all time has sold over 30 million records in styles ranging from calypso to rhythm and blues. He's won a Grammy and topped the pop charts in the U.S. and several other countries. For more information, you can visit sequan.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. The Stagecoach Theater at Grossmont College will present Romeo and Juliet with 8 performances in March, starting March 13th and running through the 21st. Based on Shakespeare's classic tragic romance, this production has a twist set against the turbulent backdrop of the Prohibition-era Chicago, blending a mafia family drama with the timelessness of forbidden love. For tickets, contact the Theater Arts Department at Grossmont College at grossmont.edu.
St. Patrick's Day weekend festivities in East County are slated for Sunday, March 15th, in downtown El Cajon at Main Street in Magnolia. Choose from a half marathon, a 5K run, or a green mile competition to compete for a large cash prize pot. Medals and free drinks after the race at the St. Patrick's Beer and Wine Festival. There's also a leprechaun challenge for racers dressed like leprechauns vying to win a costume contest. For full details, visit stpatricksdayhalf.com.
Desert artwork will be on display at the Circle of Art Show in Borrego Springs on March 14th and 15th. This juried art show will include paintings, sculptures, weavings, jewelry, and photography. For details, visit circleofart.org.
Take a trip back in time to life in the 1860s frontier during Vallecitos Day on Saturday, March 28th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Vallecitos County Park. This year's event focuses on cattle drives and cattle ranching along the Southern Overland Trail, with cattle ranching demonstrations as well as the arrival of trail riders on horseback. You can also visit with pioneer men and women in period attire, visit a mountain man camp, and hear historic talks, as well as experiencing frontier equipment, crafts, and firearms. Visitors are encouraged to dress in frontier attire. Be sure to bring a picnic lunch, since there's no food at the site. Vallecitos County Park is located in the Anza Borrego Desert on County Route S2 at mile marker 34 and 35. For information, visit sdparks.org.
The Ramona Music Fest will be held March 28th in Ramona, featuring emerging talent and popular San Diego musicians playing everything from rock to reggae and from country to Americana. This all-day outdoor event benefits the Ramona Rotary and Kiwanis Clubs. This festival will be held at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center, also known as the Rodeo Fairgrounds, at the northeast end of downtown Ramona. For details, visit ramonamusicfest.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Supervisor Bill Horn, chairman of the San Diego County Board of Supervisors, has declared 2015 the Year of the Veteran in his recent State of the County speech. Horn said, "These men and women have made sacrifices that often take terrible tolls on their personal lives. As a county and as a community, we have a responsibility to take care of our veterans." An ex-Marine Corps officer and veteran himself, Horn said, programs will be ramped up and new programs rolled out in the coming year. One of these is the Vet Connect program being rolled out at East County Libraries. That was prompted by an East County Magazine special report that found a lack of veteran services in rural areas and led to Supervisor Diane Jacob pushing through a measure to create this program. Partnership between the county government and cities in the region also aims to end homelessness among veterans as well as chronic homelessness. Horn called the actions a street-level effort to connect the homeless with prevention services and permanent housing, health care, jobs, and supportive services. Another addition will be a new Veterans Resource Center to open in Escondido, designed as a one-stop shop for veterans to access programs and services from 15 organizations such as counseling and legal aid. In addition, a memory care unit will be added at the Chula Vista Veterans Home of California. These programs will impact a huge sector of the population locally. Over one-third of all people in San Diego County are active-duty military, veterans, and their families. East County has the highest percentage of veterans in our region. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is a public service announcement for the Helen Knoll Foundation, which has a mission to prevent breast cancer in women ages 18 to 40. The foundation will host an open house on Thursday, February 26th from 5 to 8 p.m. at California Soul, a new restaurant at 12891 Highway 94 in Jamul, the former Greek Sombrero site. An admission fee includes food such as ahi tuna, sliders, and ribs, music by classical Spanish guitarist Evan Steklar, plus a raffle and door prizes. Tax-deductible donations will support the foundation's mission of preventing more lives lost to breast cancer. The foundation was started by East County photographer David Knoll in memory of his late wife Helen. For more information, visit HelenKnollFoundation.com, and Knoll is spelled K-N-O-L-L. This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Leon Thompson with today's Tribal Beat Report. Two agave roasting pits discovered recently in Hakumba Hot Springs have been carbon dated, indicating Kumeyaay Native American occupation in the Hakumba region dates back at least 9,000 years. Termed an outstanding recent archaeological find by the Imperial Valley Desert Museum in Akatia, the agave roasting pits were unearthed during construction of SDG&E's Eco Substation project at Hakumba Hot Springs in San Diego's East County. Howard Cook is chairman of Hakumba Hot Springs sponsor group, the town's advisory planning board. He believes the find should have impacts on future projects pending in the area. He told East County Magazine, "This is highly relevant to the proposed Hakumba solar project located next door and sharing roads with the under-construction Eco project. Certainly this calls for a cultural monitor and perhaps some preliminary excavating of the proposed site by the Historical Society and Native American historical cultural experts," Cook concluded. A new exhibit at the Imperial Desert Museum displays a vertical graph showing the dig site strata above a replica hearth. Yucca, juniper berry, cactus, and grass seeds were found in the ovens used by the ancient Kumeyaay people. The exhibit will travel to other museums for 9 months before being permanently installed at the Imperial Valley Desert Museum.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
There's some good news this week for fans of Dr. Seuss, the beloved San Diego children's book author who died in 1991. Three new manuscripts have been discovered that were written by Dr. Seuss, whose real name was Theodore Geisel. The three long-lost manuscripts were found by Geisel's widow, Audrey, shortly after he died at his La Jolla home, but were set aside and rediscovered recently. Random House Publications and the Geisel heirs announced this week that the first of the three books, titled What Pet Should I Get, will be published July 28th, Times of San Diego reports. The book features the brother and sister characters that Dr. Seuss introduced in One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish. Titles of the other two books have not yet been announced. Audrey Geisel is pleased at the news that more Dr. Seuss works will be available for readers, with the original newly discovered materials housed at UC San Diego's Geisel Library. She called the news especially heartwarming since this year marks the 25th anniversary of the last Dr. Seuss books to be published, Oh, the Places You'll Go. And yet another treat for readers, Random House has also announced that it will soon release Dr. Seuss works as e-books, providing yet another medium for readers to delight in the whimsical stories that have delighted generations of children. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road.
We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.